Test, test, 1, 2, 3.
Check, check.
Check, check.
Checkmate.
Checkmate. Nice.
Scott wins. Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, it is the morning. Welcome to Continuing Conversations. I'm Pastor Matt.
I'm Pastor Dana.
And I'm Layperson Scott.
Layperson Scott is here.
Also, he'll have another title around here.
Attorney,
this is my dad.
Yes, and this is Pastor. More importantly, Pastor Dana's dad is here.
I'm not the one who art in heaven, though.
My father.
Who art with us this morning.
Yes.
Welcome, Scott. Thank you for being
here.
Good
to be here.
Thank you for helping us continue the conversation. We are talking this morning about our gospel lesson, Luke chapter 11, verses 1 through 13. It's for the seventh Sunday in Pentecost, July 27th.
The Lord's Prayer.
The Lord's Prayer is how we spent most of our time.
Mm-hmm.
But first, should we talk about how old we are?
Why?
And our various ailments? Because you and I both come this morning with hurting necks.
I woke up old today. I must have slept funny. A crick in my neck.
And she woke up and
that'll help. Yeah, I woke up and I was like, I can't look up.
I have no sympathy for either of you as I am pretty much the total age of both of you combined.
Yeah, we thought this would be a good
topic
to start with you in the room of so your story, Pastor Dana, is you woke up and your neck hurt.
Yeah,
with no explanation.
I didn't
just woke up, neck hurt. My explanation: I went to a trampoline park for my daughter's fourth birthday, and I was fully aware that through the course of this trampoline park, I could tear an ACL or get an Achilles bruise or whatever happens. Who knows? But what I was not prepared for is taking about two jumps and then pulling something in my neck. I was literally like, hey, we just got here. I'm like, let me try this out. Bounce, bounce. my neck. Still, to this day, I'm turning my neck. I'm like, oh, it hurts.
I think it's just being in a church, we feel older.
I think
maybe
so.
Maybe that's the atmosphere
maybe that's
we're
it.
In.
Yeah, it's the pressure of this job.
I can't remember if it was 40 or 50, but at one of those ages where I hit the round number, I had decided that ibuprofen was now my best friend. So
yeah, it's just part of your daily routine. It's
just wake up,
pop an ibuprofen, go throughout life.
It works wonders.
Yeah, so we're, dear listeners, we are in pain.
Yep.
We are in pain.
Yep.
But
the old guy's not, though.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm okay.
The old guy in the room is doing better than us 30-somethings. Yeah.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
So as we said, this text is all about the Lord's Prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I like you started your sermon with that bit from, what is it, the Basement Yard podcast, Frankie and Joey. Anybody who's aware of this show, it's great. I've seen lots of clips on them of them on TikTok.
Yeah.
They go viral every once in a while. But I'm a sucker for these clips. I don't know what is it about two friends arguing about semantics, like the dumbest stuff. Because that's where they go viral.
Because we don't talk about it enough, and then when we finally are like, who does art? We just breeze right over that in regular in church,
and they just have like a 20-minute argument about who does art. Is that what he
because
said?
The
does
English
art
language
do
makes
art?
No sense because we were singing that one hymn and there were multiple things that didn't rhyme.
Yeah,
but if you just saw the words, they look like they rhyme.
Right.
What was it? One in tone.
Yeah, slant
and there was
rhymes.
Another one that you.
There's a lot of slant rhymes in hymns, which
you
bugs
just
me.
Sing them to rhyme. Which,
yeah,
which always makes me giggle a little bit because you're like singing along and you just like sing the words
because
so that
it's
it
bad.
Rhymes.
The rhyme is bad.
So it was one own or is tone ton?
It was like tone ton, and I was like, what is this? It's in so many of our hymns.
Okay.
And I'm guessing because they were written, maybe people with different accents, it sounds different, or it wasn't written originally in English, and I'm like, this is just bad. It doesn't work. The rhyme scheme doesn't work.
And then he's like, instead of tone ton.
Weren't the Basement Yard Boys, weren't they the ones that did the Tupperware? Have you seen that
I
one?
Have
did you
seen
see
that
one
it's
go?
It's not them, but yes. That
but
is
I love,
a viral
I don't,
one.
There's something about friends arguing semantics.
They're,
maybe it's
so
because
like,
it reminds me of my friends, but the Tupperware thing is a guy who was talking. He's like, oh, yeah, Tupperware. And he's like, wait a minute, back up. Tupperware? Like B? And he's like, T-U-B, Tupperware. They're like Tupperware. Little tubs
little
you
tubs,
keep your food
so
in. It's like, no, it's Tupperware, man. He's like, no way, Tupperware. I've been saying it wrong my whole life. And they,
Tubber, a little tub. That's what it is.
Doesn't it make sense? it should be Tupperware. Why
Tupperware.
Is it Tupperware? What is Tupper? I don't know.
I don't know. What they were arguing with, though, that I liked, and I told Dana a little bit about this, was the guy who was playing the dumb guy in in the basement.
Yeah.
Playing.
Guys, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know of them.
Yeah, who knows?
But nevertheless, he was arguing that there was art involved and that somebody was actually doing art. And, of course, the natural transition to that would have been, of course, God does art.
Yeah.
Look around. Yeah. We have all colored people.
Yeah, look at the world.
The world. And
the beautiful diversity of this world. God does do art.
I heard the great line this week that how does it happen that a brown cow eats green grass under a blue sky and we get white milk?
Hmm. It's beautiful. I love that. There's some good imagery in that, too. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we take that for granted, how technicolor and beautiful this world is.
Well, I went to public school, and our chemistry teacher said that brown cows
make milk.
Chocolate milk, so.
Yeah, that's a take. That's a take. May not be the right one.
You didn't learn that at Edina?
No, not in Edina.
I didn't learn it in Clara City either.
We breed excellence in Edina, so we're only taught the finest of science. Did that sound Edina enough for you?
Yes, it
I
did.
Really played it up.
Yes, it
we're talking about the Lord's Prayer. I always tell, because this is one that we teach every third year in our confirmation program. We have a three-year cycling rotation for our confirmation curriculum. We do an Old Testament year, a New Testament year, and a catechism year, a Luther year, sort of.
Is that how you did it growing up?
Do you remember how yours worked, Scott?
I don't remember the curriculum of confirmation.
Just because that's not how we did it at Prince Peace.
No.
They had, you know, modern.
Yeah, my church, Normandale, they had enough pastors where it was a four-year program.
Oh, 4 years.
And each pastor took one of the years. So it was
that's
like
kind of a good idea.
Yeah, like Pastor Nancy did the sixth grade every year.
Yeah.
So it's like sixth graders with Pastor Nancy, and she taught the whole curriculum.
Okay. Yep.
And then the next year you're with Pastor Dale, and then the next year with Pastor Chris, and then your last year you're with the senior pastor, Pastor Dave. And it was more intense, I think, probably than what we do. But then again, it was less intense than like what my parents' generation went to, where it was like we had to memorize and stand in front of the congregation.
Right.
Did you have that experience?
We had to memorize the catechism.
And stand in front of the people and recite parts of it and get tested in front. Yeah, we don't do that anymore.
We didn't really get tested, I wouldn't say. But
okay.
Other than we just had to do it in our classroom.
So the generation above yours, then, they're the generation that like they stood in front of the congregation and the congregation put them to the questions, where it was like, the third article of the creed. Go. Tell me. Wow. Holy moly. But so anyway, what we do here at All Saints is we have a three-year rotation. All three grades are in one large group together, and we talk about one subject, Old Testament, New Testament, or catechism. And then each year we cycle to the next one. So by the time you're in your third year, you've done all three. Mm-hmm. It works kind of well. And because we don't have the big staffing model, most churches don't anymore. I mean, it's hard to.
Yeah.
How do you sustain that? The whole staffing model that we used to go by in the 80s and 90s just really isn't sustainable in today's church. And it works pretty well. I kind of like having everybody together learning one thing anyway. But anyway, I always tell them when we learn the Lord's Prayer that, you know, this is the prayer that Jesus taught us.
Yeah.
If Jesus knew a better prayer, he would have taught us that one. But this is the one we got.
Yeah.
So, you know, why do we say the Lord's Prayer every week? Because it's the one Jesus told us to know.
Well, and
that's how we know it.
I don't know. I like saying that in worship, too, because there are a few things in our worship that you could be like, where does that come from? Like, why do we do this? What's going on with that? Even like the prayer of the day. Like, do we know who writes the prayers of the day? No.
Right.
It's just kind of
somebody
came up with
Sundays and Seasons did.
Right.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have something directly from Jesus.
Yes. And I do think the confirmation kids are always shocked to hear that this is actually
in the text.
They're like, oh, wow, this is in the Bible. It's like, yeah, that's where we got it. It wasn't just like, you know, some council of old guys got together and made it up. But to be fair to them, like the Apostles' Creed is like, a bunch of old guys got together in a room and put that together. And we've been doing that for generations. Right. So,
but even there's other things like, I think it's the benediction. Where did I realize that that was in the Bible?
The Lord bless you and keep you. That one. The Aaronic sort of blessing. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. But that's from scripture.
Sometimes we just do that stuff. Yeah. Lord bless you and keep you.
Yeah. There's a lot.
And we don't and we don't say it out loud. Like, this is a verse in
a fun sort of a fun fact. Do you know what book we use the most for liturgy and songs? What book of the Bible do we borrow the most from for our liturgy?
Songs.
Deuteronomy.
Revelation.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Which you wouldn't think, because we kind of put Revelation in this box of like, here's a weird fever dream. Like, let's not talk about that because it's weird stuff about scrolls and, you know, big beasts coming out of the sea. But it's actually where we get a lot of our liturgy comes from. There's some songs of praise that we use in worship.
True.
Yeah. Also, you talked about the sort of Abba translation.
That there's a lot more to that I didn't.
There's always, and we talk about this every week when we do this podcast. It's like there's always more we could say, but we do have a time constraint. We can't be up there for
there were people falling asleep. Hours. I saw the eyes closed. Yeah, back then.
There always is a couple. Your dad was one of them.
Sometimes
I heard him saw him locked back
heard
there.
Heard him snoring. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's not true. But we'll let that go. You need to walk down the aisle when the first couple rows are empty,
and
like today.
Bop them on the.
Or to bring them forward. I thought about that.
Yeah, I did.
I thought about that.
What do you think of that?
Yeah,
sir.
That's funny.
Yeah. So that thing I just said. What does it mean? Tell me. I did think about that this morning. I don't know why this morning it seemed like, especially at the first service,
that early service,
there was a stark delineation mark where it was like the first five rows were just empty, empty, and then it was like people begin at row five. I often think about that of like, we should just move up.
Rope off
chairs.
Right.
Yeah, take the pulpit and just push it out. Or have it on a conveyor belt, and when people get here, they sit down, settle in, and then have it move everybody forward.
Wouldn't that be great? Yeah.
But anyway, the Abba thing.
We can't staff more people here, but sure,
let's put our chairs on a conveyor belt. We have the money in the budget for that, a massive people mover system to move the rows forward. Getting
people
back to
come to church just for that.
They would, I think, just to see the spectacle of how does this giant conveyor belt system work. It's like, in my head, it's like when you go to a grocery store and put your stuff on the, it would be like that and just move people forward.
They're just the grocery.
You'd hate to be in that front row, though, on accident. Oh, we press the button. You get recycled underneath. That wouldn't be good. Anyway, Abba, Father, a great way to start the prayer because of how it defines the relationship. God is not some distant deity, nor is God, in this example, some disciplinarian parent.
Right.
Because as you explained, like you said, kind of briefly, because you got to move on to other stuff, but this translation or this specific word, Abba, is not like stern father. It's like loving father.
Well, and the commentaries I read, like the disciples or people hearing this would have been kind of shocked that that Jesus would use this kind of intimate
Abba.
Term for God, right? And be like, whoa, scandalous. You know, like, you're talking to God that way?
This is not father.
Yeah.
This is not dad. Even dad is like a step in the right direction.
It's a weird, creepy, like.
It's a weird word to say in 2025, but it would be like daddy. Yeah. It was like the word.
Creepy.
It is a little creepy, but it's like,
it's like that.
Jesus does it in a way. Yeah, I think so. To be like, this is a relationship that has this level of like love and childlike connection and dependence on the Father, God the Father, who you're addressing in this petition.
Right.
So it's an important thing that we just don't think about.
Right.
Of what that word means.
But I also wanted to choose a couple other translations that use mother.
Yep. There are some mothering images,
creator
too.
Creator is sometimes used.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was another one. No, this other one is Heavenly Father, Heavenly Mother. But, that inclusive language a little more, too.
Right. Yeah, I... So anyway, this is a fun text to preach on. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a hard text to preach on, but it's a fun text to preach on because this is something that people know so well.
Right.
This is a prayer that most people can just do without even thinking.
Well, even those kids got up there.
The kids at children's time.
You missed the second service, but they, I was like, do you know the Lord's Prayer? And they just started doing it. And yeah. I was like, great. Oh,
our Father who art in heaven. And they were just all just like, bam, like it's, from memory.
Yeah, it's up there with the Star Spangled, or not the Star Spangled Banner.
The Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah.
I screwed that up.
No, but I get it. Yeah, it's one of those things that you just know.
Well, when you see and it your every heart. Day or every week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's ingrained in you somehow. And
that's
even
why I
though
like the Apostles' Creed too,
the Apostles' Creed is the same thing,
and
there's a reason why we do it every single Sunday, and we include those things is because it's important that they're on our heart. Even though, like the Basement Yard Boys podcast highlights, you might not even know what you're saying.
Yeah.
You might think it's who does art or whatever, but it's regardless, it's important for us to say it week after week after week because of where it resides in our heart and our soul and our minds. And I've seen this firsthand as a pastor who's gone into these rooms where people have advanced Alzheimer's or dementia or something. And I'll go into these rooms and the nurses or somebody on the care team will say, you know, oh, they're not lucid today. They're not talking, you know, so just sit with them. They just like you to sit with them. And you go into those spaces thinking, yeah, I'll just sit here. Maybe I'll read some scripture with you, or maybe I'll just pray with you for a little bit or talk to you for a little bit, and that'll be enough. But I found in those cases, almost every single time you start the Lord's Prayer, and they'll perk up and start saying it.
Sure.
It's a person who has not spoken maybe in months.
Yeah.
But you start with Our Father, and they'll sit up, and it's very bizarre how that happens. Mm-hmm. That and the Apostles' Creed are two things that like we just hold on our hearts in this special place where it can be accessed.
Well, I know I experienced that with my dad. He lived to 92, and certainly his last couple of years were not full of coherency. And he wasn't always aware, but he had things ingrained in his heart, and the Lord's Prayer was certainly one of them. And so whether he understood every facet of it or not, probably not, but didn't matter. So,
but he could still recite it.
Yeah.
And it came to him when he needed it most.
And it does become a part of us and makes us who we are then, which hopefully is good people. So,
and that's why we do it.
Yeah.
Because of the deeper meanings in these things.
Well, I like also then that there's this mundane routine of knowing of having that ingrained in your heart, and maybe we don't know what we're saying or how we're saying it, but then balancing that with God knows what's in our heart and how we're praying
already,
and you know what our asks in prayer are without the words that we have to speak, like I don't know, both of those at the same time.
We may not know the words, but we still have them on our heart
going through the whole Lord's Prayer, but I was going to skip to the end.
Please do. Yeah, go for it.
There was the little story about how he told about knocking on the friend's door at midnight. And
I didn't even really get to that.
And whatever. And then he went on to say, you know, whatever you ask for in faith, you will receive. And I'm thinking, I haven't won the Powerball yet.
Yeah.
Where is it?
You know?
And why hasn't everybody won the Powerball?
Yep.
You know, and so her is now is to get every material.
Right. And that's the hard part of church kind of too, right? Is that we've trivialized prayer into like ask for what you want and you'll get it. And then when that doesn't happen, people are like, oh, faith is dead, gone. Like, so.
Yep. So ask and it will be given to you. Yeah. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened for you.
Right.
And I wrote this down as well because, like we said, there's only so much time in a sermon, and this was a tact you didn't take addressing that second half of this this gospel lesson of what do we do with that then?
Right.
What do we do of unanswered prayers? Because Jesus uses the example of if your child asks for a fish, you know, what loving parent would give that child a snake, you know?
Yeah.
And that example of, you know, why would God give bad things to God's children? But I feel like how many of us go through life going, stop giving me snakes, God. Like, yeah. I'm ready for some fish. Right. Yeah. So what do we do with this of, like, am I not asking the right way? Am I not asking enough? Am I not praying in the right ways?
Am I doing something wrong? It's not God giving me snakes, but it's, someone else.
What do we do with that? Like, I don't, And sadly, I don't have any answers for that. I don't think anybody does. I would actually probably add in here, I would beware of people who say they have an answer for that because they're probably trying to sell you something or get something from you, because that's just one of those hard things of faith of what do you do with unanswered prayers?
Are some things meant to be lessons? I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm spitballing here, but maybe I'm supposed to learn something from getting what we're calling a snake.
Snakes.
Yeah. That's the hard thing, is that when you go down that road, which I don't think you're wrong, but it's hard because that makes it's like, why is God tempting people? Why is God making people go through such hard things? You know, when you think of childhood cancer and all these terrible things, it's like, what does that snake have to do with anything? Right. Like, come on. Couldn't you teach a lesson in a less cruel way, God? Right. Is this supposed to be a lesson? I just don't understand it. But God's ways are not our ways. So we just got to throw our hands up and go, I don't know. I don't think that's the way God works, but I'm not God. It's not for me to know.
These are tests of faith.
I guess so. I don't know. Is it supposed to help us? I don't know. We hear in Scripture that God works all things for the good, so maybe.
I hear in this passage of Luke, though, I don't know, maybe I hear the reversal of the ask, like that Jesus is telling more about the one giving things than the one receiving them. And maybe what we're supposed to take from that is not to turn ourselves into God, but like to be the one giving also. And that's the, like, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. I don't know. Maybe that's too hard of a transition.
Well, that certainly doesn't have anything to do with us. You know, that piece specifically, like when Jesus says, "For we ourselves forgive everyone indebted to us." It's like, do we?
Right. That's the
Jesus.
Like,
who are you talking to?
I don't know.
You know.
Where do we see ourselves?
Forgive us our debts as we forgive everybody who's indebted to us. It's like, no, we don't. We don't do that at all. So what are you talking about?
Those are the debts that are not forgiven then, isn't it?
I guess so, yeah. The debts that we still hold?
Yes.
I don't know. So we're saying to God, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. It's like, I guess if we're not forgiving others, why do we think we deserve it in return?
Right.
Don't know.
Well, so I guess, I don't know, if the one who owns the house, who the guy's coming to knock on the door... Mm-hmm. That feels like more of the lesson for us, like where we're looking at that story and saying, shouldn't they open the door even though they say, no, go away. I'm not, my kids are asleep.
Shouldn't we be the ones opening the door?
Yeah.
Maybe we're not.
Maybe that puts us in God's spot. But
see, the lesson I got out of that was to be persistent.
Right. Yeah. That's
just keep knocking.
Yeah.
Because you will eventually get what you're asking for.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though it's not based on anything. The guy doesn't really love you.
No.
By the time he gets
If you're you, persistent enough, bread. Maybe.
He's just giving it to you to
but
get
that,
you out
yeah.
of his life.
But that wouldn't make any sense then, too, to compare that to God. To say God doesn't love you. He's just
doing it because you're annoying.
He's just doing it because you're annoying. I mean,
you just keep coming at it.
It's a different story in the Bible, but it's the lady that goes back to the judge seeking justice and finally gets it.
Yeah.
I mean, Luther uses this as an example in his explanation of the Lord's Prayer and prayer in general. You know, that was Luther's thing, pray without ceasing.
Yeah.
Most Lutherans know that. That's a Luther thing, pray without ceasing. And he says in that, in his explanation, we are to... We're to drum against God's ears with our prayers. Be very persistent. Just keep drumming it into his ear until God acts. And it's like, I guess maybe that's the lesson, is just keep going. Just keep knocking, keep seeking, keep searching, keep asking. Certainly there are people who've asked their whole lives for healing or some toxic relationship taken away of their lives, and they go through their whole lives dealing with some chronic whatever. And it's like, I don't want to say to those people, well, you just weren't persistent enough, because it's like, that's not fair. And it's not true, probably, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Loved ones die.
Loved ones die, right. Even though you drum all day and night. Please, God, it still happens. Yeah. What are we to do with that? Yeah, how does that not shake our faith? Right. Maybe it does.
I am reminded of the Shawshank Redemption scene, though, where Andy continues to write the legislature for money for a library.
Right, yeah.
And he does it for how long? Three, four, 5 years?
Yeah.
And they finally send him a couple hundred bucks. And so then he doubles his efforts on asking for more money.
Yeah.
You know, and so it does work.
It does work. Persistence does work in some areas. So. We're going to be persistent, I think God is telling us maybe in some ways. I don't know. I like the way you phrased the being present and active in those thin spaces where heaven and earth collide. Mm-hmm. I like the way you worded that because that is the way I sort of picture it in my head. Because we ask in the Lord's Prayer, you know, thy will be done. And time again in Luther's explanation, it's like God's will is done even without our prayers.
Right.
You know, the kingdom is coming despite our prayers. God doesn't need our prayers. But in these petitions, we're asking God. The kingdom is here.
Yeah.
You know, God's will is being done. But we're asking in these petitions that we be a part of it.
Right.
And that's the piece that I love about the Lord's Prayer specifically, is that we are called to be active participants in those places where heaven and earth, those thin spaces, as you said, where they intersect. And we pray in this prayer that we can be humble enough to see it and to be a part of it and be an active participant. And I think this is important for us as a faith practice and a part of our daily practice, which is why we repeat this prayer time and time again, because in our prayers, how often do we pray stuff like this? You know, usually I'll just speak for myself. Usually in my prayers, I pray for myself. Things I want, things I need, things I'm hopeful for. I pray for others.
Selfish.
Yeah, I know. Right? I prayed that first because it's me first. And then I pray for others.
And I got mine.
Yep. Yeah. Then we'll talk about family members, you know, that are needing something or, you know, whatever, and the world. So, but I was like, I pray for myself and people I love and others in the world. But I rarely, if ever, in my prayer say, God, whatever will you're willing in the world, whatever thing you're up to, I just pray I can be a part of it.
Right.
No agenda on my part of like something I want or even something that the world needs. It's just like, God, whatever you're up to, I pray that I can just be in the room where it happens, as Lin-Manuel Miranda once wrote. The room where it happens, the room where it... You guys Hamilton people?
Not enough.
Alexander Hamilton. Anyway.
But this is the... This is the messy part of it, though, too, because if we're supposed to be persistent in our prayers and ask and you shall receive and, you know, like ask for what we want, then that would lead us to ask for things for ourselves and things, you know, like things that I want to happen. Yep. Not that that's not encouraging me to pray for God's will to be done. That's encouraging me to pray for me. Like,
yeah. Yeah. But there's that specific. You know, sort of part of this.
I don't think those things are mutually exclusive, though.
Okay.
They don't. Say more about that.
Well, what are
that's
you
my seminary.
For,
that's my seminary that's training.
Well, you use the win the lottery.
True. Right. Well, right. Okay. And maybe I would use the money, at least part of it, for good causes. Mm-hmm. Feed the hungry.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
You know, shelter the homeless and all that. You know, and so you start setting up that kind of thing. If somebody dumped $100 million on me.
Yeah. So maybe that's what you've been missing.
I would pray for no taxes for my $100 million.
So you'd pray first to win the lottery.
And then
once you win it, then you pray next for a breakdown of the tax system. And then you pray for a great deal at the car dealership for whatever Maserati you're buying or whatever.
Yeah, ooh.
I know you. Yeah, flashy cars, Pastor Dana, always. As you
and then
got
I'd go get my
two hubcaps
done. Yeah.
Falling off your car at the moment. So yeah, I don't know.
We don't bring this up around Scott. He wants me to get that dent in the car.
I have more to say about that.
Yeah,
we'll let that
should
go.
We leave that in there? Okay.
That's a sore subject.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the petition of "Lead us not into temptation"? What is that saying about God? The temptation piece.
That is a confusing line.
It is.
Has been.
Yep.
You know.
It's like,
I think
please,
you were
God.
Right in that this whole thing has to do about the giver, not the receiver, us being the receiver,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And at least in this context. And we're really asking him to just keep us safe from bad stuff.
All stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We might get ourselves into bad things, but help us figure out where the fence line is.
Protect us a little bit.
So that we turn around and go back at some point.
Well, I think this is semantics again, too, of just how that kind of has to be written.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, protect us from temptation. What is it?
Lead us not into temptation.
Into temptation.
Yep.
It's like, back to church for you to say it five more times.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about the save us from the time of trial.
Right. Which is the same, which sort of negative talk.
Right. Yeah,
but it brings us to a positive thing.
Languages.
In Luther's explanation, not to keep harping on the Luther's explanation, but I do it every couple of years for confirmation. So I know a lot of these just because I've done it a few times. But the Luther begins a lot of his explanations on these petitions by saying first what they're not about. And this one specifically is God tempts no one, but, and then he goes on to talk, you know, there's a lot of like, we got to begin by saying what this isn't saying. And what this isn't saying is that God is like leading us to these tempting things to be like, I'm going to test these people. I'm like, let's see if they do the right thing. That's
we're not Job here. Yeah.
We're not Job. This isn't some big divine test to see if we've got what it takes. But there's, I don't know. This is, it's a complicated thing that we just say by heart week in and week out, whether we know fully what we're saying or not.
Yeah.
And it's complicated. I don't know.
Well, it's because I think it's because, you know, our sin leads us into all those temptations, right?
Yeah.
We get filled with ego and think we deserve a Maserati.
Or
we deserve to win the Powerball.
Right.
And, you know, maybe at some level we do, but by and large, no. This world is you know, go out there and make your way.
Right. It's not God leading us to that temptation. It's our own brokenness. It's the human condition that drives that. So it's God doesn't tempt us, but we ask in this petition that God be a part of our healing from our brokenness that leads us down those paths of temptation.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last thing I wanted to say is I like how you ended with talking about how you like to write prayers. And you
I feel like that's pretty obvious.
It's pretty obvious because you end most of your sermons
with
prayers like that you write.
Prayers. Yeah.
You like to, but you have to remind yourself that I like doing this.
Yeah.
Because it can be kind of tough. Like the yoga practice that you mentioned that we set aside, you know, why do we, I don't know. Why do we do that? Why do we set aside things that we know are good for us? It's the thing that jumped in my mind was like every night, you know, I get the kids to bed and I'm like, ooh, I've got all this time. I'm like, oh, I'll go for a run, you know, maybe. And I'll read my book and I'll do all these things. Maybe I'll try out a new recipe or something and I'll make myself something. It's like, no, I just end up scrolling on the couch, scrolling on social media. It's like stupid.
Watching same TV shows.
Watching some rerun of something I've watched a million times. Why do I not do the thing that I know is good for me?
Well, and
I like doing this, as you said. Like, I like doing it. Why do I have to keep reminding myself? Like, it's good for me and I like it.
And at the end of it, I will have, you know, enjoyed that experience. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. The barrier to entry to that sometimes is like, really hard.
Yeah.
I think you and mom have good routines of exercise that, like, you know, mom walks every day, right? Right.
Five days a week. It's her church. And, she says it's her church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
so,
and
no offense to all saints, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's
all right.
We encourage it.
Yes, we do.
Go, go find your church where it is. But there is sometimes the language of like, oh, I have to walk, you know?
Yeah.
And
to do these things.
I have to
it's
do
like
these
a reframing
and,
of it, maybe.
And
we
then,
need.
You know, she loves it in the middle of it. And then at the end of it, it's like, okay, yes.
I feel great.
Good.
Yeah, because I did something.
Yeah. Do you feel like that about exercise?
Yeah, I heartily enjoy exercise and look forward to it. And I'm disappointed when I have to give it up. Like days like today where it's hot and humid out. It's just
days like today when you're sitting doing a podcast
it's just too
room with us
to go outside to exercise. But you know, will I go out and bike for 2 or 3 hours at a time? No problem. Yeah. And so, but are there other things like sitting and writing? I like to write.
Yeah. You like
also,
to write.
I have written a number of things and I always wonder why don't I write more?
Hmm.
And, you know, I went to a writing class a couple of weeks ago, taught by a guy who's a retired English high school teacher, mm-hmm. and he's funny and he's insightful and he's great. And of course, the first question that he asked the class was, "Why are you here?" And I was like, "I'm looking for inspiration, you know, because I haven't written much lately, and hoping to find that. And well, have I written anything in the 2 or 3 weeks since? Not really. So." Other than a few emails, which don't count, but
yeah,
you know,
no.
Why don't
you wrote
do the things
you wrote a birthday poem?
I wrote a limerick for my brother, who's 70 today. Happy birthday, Russell!
Happy birthday, Russell!
And so, that was fun.
Do you know the limerick off the top of your head?
By heart. Ooh,
is it appropriate? Is it a clean, church-worthy limerick?
I can do the first verse. There once was a guy named Russell whose coaches urged him to hustle.
Mm.
But he thought for a bit and then said with quick wit, "Why do that when I have more brain muscle?"
Ah, you did it. That's good. That's a great, great limerick. Love it.
I don't know the other 5 verses that I wrote.
That's all right. I mean, that's a limerick, right?
Yeah.
There once was a ba ba da ba da.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
So anyway, that was.
It was good. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I wish I had the answer to why we don't do the things.
Why don't we don't
like
do the things
and
yeah.
are good for us?
Well, people say that about church all the time. Like, oh, this was good to be at church.
I should come
this
more often.
Yeah. It's why going to camp in the summer. There's like the camp high right after, and then kids never show up again, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You don't see them for a while.
And it's something within us that like doesn't stick.
Yep.
It's not getting in there it should.
One
or like we want to.
One mm-hmm. other possible answer to solving that problem is to rely on each other a little bit more, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Love that.
Accountability.
To pray.
Yeah.
Community.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love if the answer is community. That's because as a church person, it's perfect. That's exactly what we need.
That's
we need
your mission is
exactly is trying to get people to realize that this is a place where you can find connection and people who will walk with you.
I was
going to
say that about the yoga class. Like, I kind of want to go back. I like that teacher who taught it. Like, I kind of want to go back and see her and have her teach that again.
Yep.
Or I used to go to Lifetime, and that was like you'd see the same people every class.
And there's some accountability
go to the same
in it.
Teacher and,
there's community in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Stuff like that.
I will say, for moms walking and even for my biking, those are our personal times, though. I don't know. Get close to God is the right phrase, but maybe it works on this podcast. But I think that's a lot of it, is just to be out there and be able to meditate and just do a mindless activity and let your legs do the walking and your brain do the wandering.
Mm-hmm. It's like a locomotive meditation.
Yeah.
I talked about this in that spiritual practices retreat I did. Yeah, walking the
labyrinth.
Walking the labyrinth is sort of a locomotive meditation. It's like it's a meditation, but you don't have to sit here, you know, with your legs crossed going home, you know. It's like you can be moving your body. Some people some people can't sit still.
Right.
Like they would feel so agitated and like, I can't do it. There's a way you can meditate while moving around.
Well,
so that's perfect.
It's a new world of spirituality that I think we're discovering now too in like modern times,
whether it's a walk or yoga.
Yeah, whether it's moving or exercise or music and song and so we have this idea that meditation is sitting in a room in a quiet dark room with
candles
nothing.
Or something a singing bowl
and like know. And so that's just I don't know being broken every day, like that idea.
And some
that
people,
is,
that's what they need.
Oh yeah,
if that's what you need, that's great. But like, there's other ways to do it. And yoga is a spiritual practice.
There's
walking,
the nap ministry.
Oh, I love the nap ministry.
Love a good spiritual nap.
Yes, yes. I've got one coming
in
a couple hours.
I was going to say, I think you've practiced that once in a while.
A spiritual nap
by accident.
Yeah. Hopefully, with golf going on in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's something. Something can be very rewarding in that. And if finding a community to help support you in keeping with those things can be
very
important. It's
also really hard, though. That's that's not an easy
That's true.
Community
that's true.
Practice.
But it's good. And you found that. Because you and your wife, you walk together
No.
and do this? Or you do separate?
Rarely we will walk together.
She walks too fast.
It'd be hard to connect to the divine if you walked together, I suppose. You'd probably end up talking about Dana and like, what are we going to do with this daughter of ours?
She gets into the conversation.
Yeah.
We have
what
two
are we
going to
do?
And,
yeah,
know,
I know.
We have, there are other aspects that of our lives that we talk about, but mm-hmm. yeah, there's no doubt our family is the primary focus of our conversations
for sure.
a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys don't regularly
no, we don't
exercise together. Those
although
are
she has
solitary.
Started to bike with me, but that type of biking for me is very different from the road biking that I do where I'm all alone and just out on a county highway that's
yeah.
probably empty, but for me. So I find that, and everybody always asks, aren't you worried about getting hit or whatever? And I'm like, no, because
you have been.
There's been once have in you? Like 15 years.
Oh, my gosh. Did you get injured? What happened?
The car hit you at the stoplight.
Oh, well, yeah.
I was just crossing a car.
I was crossing against a stoplight, I guess, and there was a car that was
turning right.
Turning right, and I was coming from the right, and so they were looking left, and so I basically ran into their right front fender and went sprawling across their hood, and I was fine. My bike needed new wheels, but otherwise.
How about your body? Did your body need a surgery or anything?
No,
I don't care about the wheels. Well, wow, really? You bounced right off the hood and got back up?
Yeah, well, I mean, by that
did
time
your neck
the car
hurt
was going,
more?
Yeah.
You know, four
how's your
or five
neck?
Miles
yeah,
out.
It
yeah,
was
my
bad.
Neck was fine. And no, I'm
just me and Dana.
I'm sort of made of rubber, and so
apparently
I can tolerate
weebles. They wobble. They don't
that, yeah.
fall down. Yeah.
Now, if I was biking down the county highway and somebody swerved off the road and whacked me, that would be a different story.
That would be a very different tale.
You hit a rock one time.
And then I hit a rock.
Went tumbling because you kept the rock. This is a, it's
that,
in your.
That
office.
Is true.
You kept the rock.
He's giving away all my good stories.
You kept
well,
the
you're
rock
not
that hit
them.
You.
Give them away.
Well, okay, I was biking down the shoulder mm-hmm. on Cedar Avenue, and looking at who knows what, and mm-hmm. Cedar can be a little bit busier, but it has nice wide shoulders, so I wasn't mm-hmm. worried about traffic. But as I was looking one direction or the wrong direction, anyway, yeah, I hit a rock that probably was 4 or 5 inches in diameter, and
it's a large rock.
It was a large rock, and it was enough to knock my bike tire off.
Now, why didn't you swerve around the rock?
He wasn't paying attention.
Just kidding. Wow, that's
I
hadn't bad.
Prayed enough.
Yeah, you didn't pray enough. You didn't ask
God
for
put that
enough.
Rock right in his path.
God was testing you with that rock.
I suppose.
You once told me that sometimes things like that are it's just math in the world. Derivatives.
Yeah.
Differential equations. That lines cross sometimes.
We
can't have your dad and Tim on the same podcast.
We all have
with
an equation that defines our lives.
The intersection of biking and nerdy math stuff, they would never stop talking. This would be a 5-hour podcast of them just going on tangents, and we would never go anywhere.
Topic? We yeah. could talk about presidents.
Not the current one.
No.
Did you get injured at all from your rock
That one was
injury?
Worse.
I did scrape up my left side because basically, my front tire went sideways. My bike went down. I slid and kind of rolled.
Yikes.
And my helmet did hit the ground on that one and stuff. So
wear your helmets.
Yeah, wear your helmets, kids.
And then replace them after you've had an accident. Is
yeah, good idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
Follow up to that. But, yeah, since you mentioned that then, okay, I guess I did fall once last year too.
Oh, and yeah, you'd.
That was on a bike path.
That was your arm, right?
No, that was my back.
Oh, yes. Yes, I forgot about that.
I was biking downhill on a bike path, and there was a slope on my left side, and there was water coming off the slope from a recent rainfall.
Oh, beautiful.
And I was trying to find a dry spot to get my tires to, and so I nudged just a little bit in one direction, and that was enough for the water to take my tires out from under me. And
oh, my gosh.
I went down and slid about, 15 feet or so, and so for the next 2 weeks, I had apparently sprained
a lower back,
and it was an impossibility to get up a lot of days. And
holy moly!
To stand up from a chair, but
wow,
we're better now, and that's old news, and so
maybe biking is not for you. Have you considered that maybe this is not your sport?
Never for a second.
Doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down, you just keep getting back up. Maybe that's the lesson. Persistence.
It was Father's Day. You went on a bike ride and it rained, so we had to come pick you up. But then we went on a bakery crawl.
We made something positive out of that. Yes, we did the bakery.
Oh, that was the year of the bakery crawl.
From Northfield. That's great. Farmington and I don't know, was there a third bakery we hit even? I don't know.
I don't remember now.
Whatever.
But it was fun.
You're an apple fritter guy, I understand.
I see you've had conversations with my daughter.
Yes. Yes.
He asked.
I asked.
Matt, you had like three donuts brought to you this morning.
I did. I had people just love to bring me treats, which is very nice.
Yeah.
But like it's not good for my long term health. We've been talking a lot about fitness, and I'm like, I don't know if I should be having like five donuts every Sunday.
So when you saw I went to bakery,
holy moly!
Yeah, we were like, donuts are here.
You were thinking, yeah, okay. And I thought about it,
but there were no apple fritters here, no. So you went and you found one for yourself.
No, I had an egg sandwich instead.
See,
because I was trying to come up with something healthy.
That's nice. Good. Mm-hmm. Good. So, good for you.
Because actually,
we had donuts yesterday.
We did the bakery thing in Shakopee yesterday.
Apple fritters aren't bad for you. They got apples in it. It's practically a salad at that point. It's like a Waldorf salad. Think about it like that with the salad. Yeah, I think so.
That's right.
Well, should we talk about food more, or should we end this thing? We've been talking for 45 minutes. Did you have any thoughts, ideas, questions, concerns?
No, I think I wanted to make the point just that we do this as a routine to say the Lord's Prayer every week. And, I hope that the Holy Spirit has some new life for people in that sometimes instead of just some empty words. So,
yeah. And I think that was good. That was good that you took that tact this morning of like, we're just going to spend some time taking apart something that you say by memory every week. And maybe you don't take very much time to think about all the separate pieces of, because this would be a good spiritual practice to think about it from a new angle.
Yeah.
Maybe take something different from it.
Yep.
Yeah. And it does create a common bond between all of us.
Yeah.
We all know.
Yes. That was
and
something
it's something
I
we say all together,
to.
Right? So in unison.
Then we can examine it on another level, perhaps with the Basement Boys or whatever they are.
Exactly. And we got Joey and Frankie helping us out this morning.
Yeah. Well, okay. Level with it's, we're all saying it together as a community here, but you know, around the world, around the country, around the world, too, that this is
something that's
that
true.
We practice communally.
That is a powerful piece, too, when you think about it, of how many churches today, this Sunday, said that very same prayer.
Right.
Maybe in slightly different translations, maybe in a different language, but almost every church around the country has this as a weekly part of their liturgy.
Yeah.
Some churches skip the Apostles' Creed. We did this Sunday, you know. Who knows if, you know, not every church does the confession and forgiveness in the same way.
Right.
And, you know, but the Lord's Prayer is in almost every single church.
I would say some churches don't even read the Bible.
No,
right?
No.
Like, there's
just
not a reading,
but
they would say the Lord's Prayer.
They'll say that.
The easy example for that is the Catholic Church, which messes with the Lord's Prayer because of what? They leave off the very end about forever and ever.
That's actually the Luke version, though. That we read this morning.
Yeah, this has no.
This doesn't have the
first. Yeah,
but every
final
Protestant
petition.
In the Catholic Church gets betrayed when they go there because
all the heads snap.
They're like, "Ooh, I know this one."
Ooh, there's a Protestant in our midst.
Right.
Get him!
But they're like
guys.
Ready to go, and then they out themselves.
Take them away, boys, and a bunch of altar boys get up from the shadows and pull you away. No.
So you know what I've been doing.
Oh yeah, I've been there before. Yeah. Crazy. But this is a good, I thought this was a good way to sort of re-examine something that we all know by heart. And if you at home, dear listener, have thoughts about this as well, we'd love to hear them. Call us here at church, drop by, send us an email. We'd love to continue the conversation with you. Scott, thank you for being here today.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Talk to everybody soon. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.